So as you have noticed, we have gone through quite a number of skills. Not all of them, of course. There are many, and we cannot cover everything. And there are other sources where you can, from which you can learn things. But there are many things to learn. But this meeting today and next week are going to be the last two meetings of the semester, and we can afford to spend time on talking about really important things that are kind of, they're not hard skills, not hard engineering skills, but there are things that you absolutely have to also learn, and know how to deal with these things. Today, I'm going to talk about time management, but also dealing with stress. Of course, probably nobody teaches you that. Nobody taught me that. I had to learn, listen. I went to a couple of workshops on the topics. It took a little bit of time, but anyway, whatever I will tell you today is the things that I have learned, and I was really observant because I knew I would have to teach that to my students. So whatever I have learned about this, it's never enough learning to manage time. I have problems with managing my time now, even though I have quite a lot of experience with working and managing time. So whatever I learn about this, here is where we are, the last two topics. Actually, 15, 16, this is going to be today, both of them, and then ethics is next week. So first is time management, then stress, and then a few important things that have to do with both time management and stress. First, time management. Here is what, this is coming from a survey that they conducted in 1999 among, I suspect, the US faculty, asking them where they spent most of their time. And this is what came out of that survey. Teaching took a lot of time. And I do think that especially for a young faculty, when you are just done with your PhD, start working at a university, it's going to take you a lot of time to teach. The second thing is research. And in terms of your promotion, your career, research is by far more important than teaching. Teaching is important, but research is by far more important. Service is reviewing, taking part in all kinds of committees, organizing conferences, you know, things that have to do with around your job. So this is what it typically looks like, I think, even though in theory they tell you that you should spend as much time on teaching as you spend on research. In practice, probably teaching may take more time. It also varies, of course, within the same person over time. So how can you use your time most efficiently? Because there are so many things that you need to do. First thing is learn, have a calendar. If you don't have a calendar, it's going to be increasingly more difficult. Just out of curiosity, is there anybody here who does not have a calendar? One. Yeah, I admire you. My wife, she does use calendar, but much less than I do. And she manages, which is really admirable. But I have calendar precisely because it frees me from remembering. I just write down, and then I don't need to think about it. This is not my calendar. I just took a screenshot from somewhere. But your calendar is going to be looking full, and if you have a calendar, then it helps, definitely, to remember. It's important to look at the calendar. Sometimes I forget to look at my calendar in the evening, and then I forget about things that are in the calendar. Occasionally it happens, you know, once every few months. But looking is important. So look at it in the evening, in the morning. Look at what you have to do the next day. There's a funny anecdote. As you may know, I spent 6 years living in the Netherlands. And I was always a very serious young man. I was 24 when I moved. I was always very serious. I came to appointments, I remembered things, I was on time, etc. But there in the Netherlands, I felt like a fish in the water. Amazing, because everybody had a calendar and you know, everybody was on time and remembered about meetings. you could make an arrangement a month in advance, and you didn't need to call to confirm. No, you made an appointment and you were there. One day, it was my first year in the Netherlands, I remember a guy called me, a friend, and asked me if I would visit him for dinner in another town in the Netherlands. It was Gorkum. And I was in Zoetermeer, close to Delft, close to The Hague. I had to take a train. So he invited me for dinner. That's okay. We set a date a month in advance, roughly. And and in the conversation, he asks me how. It was the time before Google Maps, so I would have to get a map of the city to find his house. So he proposed that he picks me up from the railway station. So he asked me, which train will you take? I don't know, I said. So he told me, well, there are two trains, 5:22 and 5:52. Which one will you take after work? I was working at the time. I said, okay, 5:22. So he said, I'll wait for you at the station. And then I thought, I'll teach you a lesson. No confirmation. I didn't call to confirm, did nothing. I went by that train, and he was there waiting at the station a month in advance. I thought at that time, I was completely devastated by that, of course. And I thought, well, in Poland, it was communist Poland, it was different than it is now. I would forget about that. I wouldn't be on the train. He would not be at the station, and the train would be late, I thought. Everything would go amiss. But it was that organized, and I have to admire, every society has good and bad things, remember. Polish society has also many good things, and also some bad things. Dutch society has also bad things, but this is a good thing, organization. Another thing that I was told by Dutch people is, if you come late to a meeting in Germany, I had some experience with that. Germans typically are angry at you. You know, how could you? How could you come 5 minutes too late? In the Netherlands, you know, if you come late, people will not be angry as long as you bring some donuts or something, you know, something sweet for the coffee or so. So they are more relaxed and at the same time very organized. And I definitely recommend you being organized because that influences the perception of you. If you keep your appointments, coming on time, etc., etc. So definitely, and calendar will help you. The next thing that you have to realize, of course, and many of the things you probably have heard, is calendar is not enough because you need to prioritize things. There are things that are more important and less important, or things that are important and things that are even more important. So you have to prioritize. Two interesting quotes that you can kind of read and think about. Definitely, you cannot be busy with things that are not important. You should really focus on important things. There is, I don't know if you heard about the 20-80 rule. Some books were written about this. The idea is that 20% of things that you do bring you 80% of the effect. And 80% of the things that you do bring you 20% of the effect. So, you know, they say the same is valid in companies. 20% of your customers bring you 80% of the income, etc., etc. So it's a good idea definitely to identify those important things and focus on them. That will make you work more efficiently. This is something, I don't think I have ever shown you that. There is a guy, his name is Stephen Covey. He died already. He was a guy who would write self-help books about time management, about highly effective families, you know, several of these books. If you go to a bookstore, you'll find his books. I learned about this not from the book. I read the book later, but I went to a short 2-hour-long course on time management because I thought I needed that at some point. And the lady who was presenting showed this. And here is what she said. I think it's quite actually quite smart, quite wise. You can divide things that you have to do into four different categories according to two dimensions. First dimension, second dimension. The first dimension, it's kind of going, okay, the division is the rows, importance. There are things that are important and things that are less important, or unimportant, I would say, not important. The other dimension is urgency, urgent and not urgent. Here is what is not urgent and important. Well, taking care of your body, exercising. If you don't do that, at the age of 30, 40, 50, you will have problems with your heart, with your lungs, your condition, you will get too fat, you know, all kinds of things will start happening. So definitely you have to take care of your body, and it's not urgent. People don't tell you, you know, you have to exercise now, right? It's you who decides when to do it. Vocation means your, essentially, what you are going to do in life, your career planning, kind of the strategic things that you decide. Not urgent. People will not force you to do it, tell you you have to do it now. Planning. So things that you do at your leisure, you take a cup of coffee, tea, or whatever, drink, relax, and think. Or exercise. These are important things. Things that are important and urgent is your baby is crying. You have to do something. You have to feed the baby, change the diaper, or maybe something is happening. You have to attend to it right now. Now. And it's important. A kitchen fire. Suddenly there's fire. You have no choice. You have to react to it right now. It's important and urgent. Some calls, like your boss is calling. Your advisor is calling. You have to pick up. You cannot screen your advisor away. You have to pick up. Your husband or your wife is calling. I would think this is important also. So these are urgent and important. Urgent because you need to pick up the phone now. Not important and urgent are interruptions. You know, you sit thinking, doing editing your paper, your dissertation, and a colleague comes in and starts chatting you about the movie that he saw last night. It's neither important, it's not important, but it's urgent because your colleague is there now, interrupting you. Some distractions like, you know, some noise, something happening, news, important news, that they are not really important for you, but they are urgent. Other phone calls, somebody is calling you, something happens on Facebook, you get a notification that somebody posted that passed gas. Passing gas is the American version of the British farting, and farting is, you know, we talked about this. So, he burped and then posted on Facebook about this. That's absolutely unimportant, and because it beeps, you feel like I should look at it. Unurgent and unimportant are, you know, browsing newspapers, looking on the internet, just, you know, to see what is happening. It's not important for you, it will not change your life, and it's not urgent. You decide to do it. And now the important thing is that you should always be in that quadrant, always there. If you are there and are never there, so eliminate this as soon as possible, just eliminate it completely. If you are there, then you never need to be here. This is another quote supporting it. Hard work is often the easy work that you did not do at the proper time. If you do it at proper time, when it's not urgent, you never will face those situations. Urgent is like, you know, there's no milk, and you drink coffee with milk and open the refrigerator, suddenly there's no milk, right? You need to do something about it. You cannot drink coffee without milk. It is urgent and important. If you think ahead, you buy milk the day before or 2 days before. So always be here. When I was at your phase of development, you are my younger colleagues, younger in terms of age and also, of course, the scientific development. When I was at your stage, the distractions were newspapers, TV, it was called news groups. They were like a precursor of, all kinds of web pages where you can look at, or emails that were collected into bunches and then sent to you. So I got very, actually I, out of my life, probably 50 years long, I did not have a TV. I still don't have a TV. I have a TV set, but no antenna. That is one thing that I eliminated very early on, because TV is a thief of your time. And then I rarely read newspapers, and I came across the idea that you should actually eliminate TV and newspapers when I was doing my doctoral studies. So I kind of confirmed it. It wasn't a big loss. But if you are still watching TV, eliminate it. Just like that, you know. Throw away the antenna or something, if your family members can handle it. Because it was funny. Herb Simon once in his class asked, who is reading newspapers? Somebody said, I'm reading newspapers. What did you learn today? And the guy said, oh, there was some bombing in the Middle East, some strike in France, etc. And then he said, well, I knew about it already without reading the newspaper. If there is something important in the world, then you will know it by noon, typically, because your colleagues will tell you. And if it's not important, why would you want it? He said, if instead of reading newspapers and watching TV, where people are entertainers in the TV, they tell you all kinds of things. These are people who know nothing about the issues. And the same newspaper journalists, most of them know nothing. If you want to learn something about an important thing in the world, get a good book. Somebody who has spent years on the problem, they probably wrote a book about it. Just read it, and then you will know more. So that's essentially the argument for getting rid of all of these things. You cannot get rid of these things, but you can screen them, maybe. You get an unimportant phone call, just, you know, call back. I rarely do that, by the way, but I didn't like my friends who were screening or not picking up and then calling back. And one friend did that. I started doing the same. So she called me back. I didn't pick up. I called her later. She wouldn't pick up. She called me late. And, you know, we played that game until she got the message. So I don't do that, but you can. If there is somebody really unimportant, you know, really distracting you, just don't pick up the phone. The next thing that is important is planning. Planning is a really important thing. You know, in communist times, they had plans, five-year plans, etc. This was all kind of rubbish, but planning, real planning, is very important. And especially for people like us, who are doing most of the work with our head, with our brain, a very important trick that I learned and started to appreciate is making appointments with yourself. So in your calendar, you know, reserve a block of time, you have an appointment with yourself, don't schedule anything else there. One of the people in my PhD committee, a psychologist, Baruch Fischhoff, he was on one of the first slides, you know, my mentors. He said that sometimes people think that faculty, that scientists are smarter than people working in the industry. He said, I don't think so. I think, you know, there are smart people in both groups of professions. The problem is that the way they work, the mode in they work. So somebody in the industry, a manager, comes to work at 7 o'clock in the morning. Why? Well, because there were some emails from the previous day, there were some things to do. Goes into his or her office, has to do some signatures that the secretary left the night before, make some important calls, etc. From 7 to 8:30. 8:30, the secretary comes, new work to do. 9 o'clock, the first meeting. The meeting ends at 10, the boss jumps into the car, drives to the next meeting at a client's site at 11, etc., etc., the whole day. Business lunch, another meeting, another bunch of signatures, something to read, something to sign, something to do, emails to respond. 6 o'clock, half dead, goes home, and the only thing that that person has power to do is to, you know, to use the remote for the TV and falls asleep at the TV probably. So essentially the whole day there was no time to think. And a professor, a faculty, or you as PhD students, you can afford to have uninterrupted chunks of time to think. And that's absolutely very, very important. Some things require you to think, and this is what we do best. Being creative. So part of that planning is plan for meeting with yourself. Because of those chunks of time, we can come up with good ideas. The quality time is different for different people, by the way. Some people work very nicely in the morning. Some people prefer evenings. I used to like evenings when my family went to sleep. When I was a teenager and still at home, everybody went to sleep and I turned on the lights. I was alone, quiet. I could do the homeworks. I could think. But later on in life, I discovered that mornings are much better for me. I'm more fresh. But everybody has their own preferences. So just find the time that you are the freshest, that you think best. As a faculty, by the way, what you can do is you have several days where you come to teach, to meet students. Try to schedule meetings at the less efficient times for you. If you are a morning person, schedule your meetings in the afternoon. When you teach, it's a good idea to teach a few days of the week, and then you have sometimes a whole day free from teaching. Keep them free, stay at home, and spend it on creative things. You can afford it now when you are students. I'm sure there will be days or half days where you have no classes and you can just sit down and think. So planning, this is another advice that I think is very good. If we make a deal, everybody sends me, wires some money to my account, as much as you think that the advice was worth, 10 years from now, I'm sure I would be a very rich person. You just send me as much money as you think this is worth. I'm joking, of course, I don't need money, but definitely very, very valuable advice, planning. And what I sometimes do is when I have a deadline, like you have a defense, let's say, you're facing a defense a few months from now, or submission of your dissertation, you can plan back where you do your experiments, when you focus on writing, etc. When you think back, it's much easier to schedule and to be realistic because you know how much time you need for different things. It's really very good. I show this picture in particular to master's students. All of you have the experience of being a master's student writing a thesis. The next thing that you may not feel it yet, but you will feel it very, very soon, because the moment you start publishing, there will be people asking you to review papers for them. There will be people who ask you to be members of some respectable committee, organize a conference, organize a special issue of a journal. In the department, they will ask you, can you please join the admissions committee or evaluations committee, etc., etc. Many things that you can do. In the beginning, you have maybe more time and you can show your face in different places, your name, etc. But the further you go, the more you have to learn to refuse things. Politely, of course, to say, sorry, but I'm overwhelmed with work. I cannot afford to do it anymore, so I have to decline. Of course, be careful, because you cannot decline everything. If you decline everything, then you resemble a well where people can throw in things, but never anything comes back from the well, right? People like that are not very, very nice, not very liked, so you have to do some share of your work, some service, but be selective. Do things that you really like, that you are good at. And distribute work, routine tasks among people around you. This picture is, you can find it in many languages. In English, the Americans are saying too many chiefs, too few Indians. So we have one worker and then the others are commenting how the worker should do the work, of course. Everybody is eager, but some people are eager to work, some people are eager to let others work. So you have to make sure that that the work is distributed equally, both at home and at work. So very likely your husband or your wife is also a professional. You have to be understanding for that. And, you know, if you cook, the other person washes the dishes, or the other way around, right? Somebody has to throw out the garbage, somebody has to do the shopping. You have to distribute it. If you have children, absolutely get them involved, absolutely. Children who are brought up in this stress-free environment, they don't need to do anything. They just, you know, see, sit, eat, and breathe. That's very bad for them. Really, for them, it's very bad. They should have the feeling, I have my duties. They should be evaluated on how well they perform the duties, so assign them things. The same in your family, I mean, your spouse, your husband, your wife. Make sure that they are also involved. Whatever is fair. Another thing that helps you a lot with time is asking for advice. A good friend of mine, Raul Valdez Perez, he wrote a book called Advices for Winners. I knew him, we had the same advisor, he was working also with Herb Simon. I knew him, and actually we are still in touch, we see each other very often. He tells a few interesting stories. It's a thin book, I don't think it's translated, it's a niche book, very, very small, probably small number of printed copies. The idea is that very often we don't make an optimal choice because we are not aware of that choice. It's him who says, suppose you know 1,000 things, and this person, I don't know, a janitor or somebody who is less educated than you, knows only 100 things, and you know 1,000. Well, you know much more. He writes, I bet there are at least 2 things among the 100 that you don't know. So ask for advice. Ask advice people who have been there, who have done it, who know more than you. People typically are very flattered when they are asked about something. Oh, that all kinds of people, of course. But if I ask you for advice, I'm sure you will be flattered. You will gladly share your knowledge with me, right? So don't ever be afraid of it. Talk to people about things. If you are facing a difficult decision, difficult choice, where to buy, what kind of car to buy, what kind of refrigerator to buy, or what book to read, what movie to see, talk to people. They will tell you. So this seminar is actually, you didn't ask, but it's imposed on you a lot of advice. But you can ask for advice. Ask advice, everyone, but be careful, because people say all kinds of things. You are the decision maker, you need to make a choice. But when talking to people, you will learn useful stuff. Our janitor in the building in Pittsburgh, I learned at least 2 or 3 things from him that are absolutely valuable. One thing was, I had a European car. He told me where to get used parts for European cars. That was very valuable advice. I stayed with that business for years. I used to buy used parts from them. Another thing I learned from him is how to get spots, dirty spots from furniture. He had tricks for that. Wonderful. And he was actually a very smart fellow. He was a college graduate. He just didn't want to have any responsibilities, so he worked as a janitor. Very smart fellow. And you wouldn't know it until you talk with him, and then you realize, oh boy, this guy is quite smart. You must have seen this when you are facing something big, something difficult, like writing a dissertation. The first step, it's very natural for us, for humans, to postpone it. Okay, I'm going to start working on my dissertation when the semester is over in June, right? Or, no, I'll start on Monday, etc. It's important to just start, make the first step, and then the rest will go. It's an important thing, it's human nature that makes us postpone things that are big. And one remedy is to just make the first step. This is another advice that I heard in the beginning of my work as a faculty. That was in the context of teaching. Parkinson's law. This is not the Parkinson from the Parkinson disease. That's another one. He wrote that work expands so as to fill the available time for its completion. Suppose you have to do something. Let's say you have to write a paper. And the deadline is June 15. If you start today, I'm sure you will have enough work until June 15. If you start May 31st, you also will have enough, you'll be busy full time. The work essentially expands. Of course, with some tasks, it's a good idea to start early and to expand. But what are the tasks that sometimes it's a good idea to put a time limit on it? Definitely a good advice when you do teaching. Because if you don't apply this rule in teaching as a young faculty, you can easily spend 100% of your time on teaching. Preparing for the lecture, you will be still unhappy, you don't know enough, you read, keep reading, keep correcting slides, etc. You can easily fill the time. But they expect from you publications, research. So as a young faculty, I was given the advice, set a time limit for preparing for lectures, for classes. I did that. So I said, I have a lecture on Wednesday. Okay, the whole Tuesday is for that lecture. In the beginning, when you teach it for the first time, you need a lot of time. But then I don't do it on Monday, just Tuesday. What happens if it's Tuesday is almost over, you have to go to bed, and you have not prepared enough? Tough. The students will not get their money worth of your teaching. Tough. But the alternative is that you will die in the long run under the pressure of teaching, and will not have enough time to do research. So setting time limit for something is a good idea. That's what I have about time management. Just a few advices. There are many probably, but just a few things. I do think they are useful, so I suspect that you knew about some of them and you applied them in your work. The next big thing is stress. Of course, there are two types of stress. Did I tell you why I'm saying there are two types of people, two types of things? Did I tell you that? That's an anecdote. I was once going back home from my office at the university when I was working on my doctorate. I was going to pick up my sons by bike. I went by bike to the university. And on the way, I noticed a Japanese PhD student. I knew that he was also working with Simon, and I knew him. I met him, maybe I chatted with him a little. I was very interested in Japan at that time. So I stopped my bike and I walked with him a little bit. And I started chit-chatting. So I told him, well, most of the Japanese people I know live in this tall building at the intersection of Morwood and Center. And you live in Squirrel Hill, that's another neighborhood. Mostly smaller houses. How come? And he said to me, well, there are two types of Japanese people. And if somebody took a picture of me, probably my ears would be like that, my eyes like that. I hope not, the jaw would not be there. I thought I would learn something very interesting about Japan. And he told me, there are two types of Japanese people. There are rich Japanese people and poor Japanese people. He proved that the Japanese do have a very good sense of humor, contrary to the stereotype. So whenever somebody simplifies too much, I usually say there are two types of people. There are two types of Polish people. There are two types of German people, etc. You know, when I hear generalization, what I want to say is that it all depends. So there are two types of stress. Actually, they do talk about it a little bit like this. There's this positive stress and negative stress, paralyzing stress. Here's a nice quote. Stress is like spice. A little bit makes life, makes the dish more tasty, makes life more interesting. But too much makes the dish blunt, dull. Too much can choke you. The same with stress. That's what they call the negative stress. It paralyzes you. and the types of stress that are paralyzing as disease. Your child is sick. Your wife wants to leave you. Yes, this is the stress that is very difficult to handle. Very difficult. Of course, you will survive it, but it's paralyzing. It's not very healthy. You know, your heart, your blood pressure, everything starts being not very good. They want to fire you. You realize that you will not finish your dissertation. They rejected your paper. You know, things that are of serious nature. So, how can you deal with stress? How can you handle it? I used to listen to Polish radio, one. The reason for that is I used to listen to program three when I was a young person. But when I came back to Poland, my car was imported from US and did not have the frequency of program three in the radio. It had just, you know, the Americans have just odd frequencies, I think. And then I realized, oh, but I can catch Radio 1. So I listened to 1 for a long, long time, since probably 2007 until 2023. Last year, I said, no. It's unpleasant to listen in the news, you know, the politics. It has changed so dramatically that it's unpleasant to listen to. They are just as if, you know, when you listen to news that are more objective, telling you about things that are happening, and you listen to the public radio today, it's just, you know, news on the Mars and on Venus. Two different things, really. So I stopped listening to it, but I listened to it for a long, long time. And then I thought, oh boy, Polish people have become such hypochondrics. Yes, hypochondric, mm-hmm. Yes. So they talk in the advertisements is about medicine. And medicine, typically for stress. And these are things I remember hearing from the radio. All kinds of things that are dealing with stress. Rana forte, valerin, positivum, ashwagandha. This is not for you. Not for me either, but not for you, definitely. My teacher in high school in Poland, you know, when we were kids, we went on an excursion, and of course we bought some alcohol, and we were drinking. That was kind of cool, you know, doing something not completely legal. We were still underage. And the teacher, in the evening, one evening, she came into our room. Of course, she knocked, but we quickly hid the bottles. But she could smell the smell of beer or whatever we were drinking in the air. By the way, I wasn't drinking that. I had periods when I was drinking zero and periods when I was drinking with my colleagues. Anyway, she smelled the smell of alcohol, but she was very discreet. She kind of said whatever she wanted to say. She retreated and went back. And then we had a class, Godzina Wychowawcza. That's like a class on just general issues. And she would tell the following thing. I can understand when you are 50, 60, you know, when you are older, you may need some alcohol to have good time. But you, when you are so young, why do you need alcohol to have a good time? I thought it was, I remember it. It was, I think, a great thing to say. I reminded her. Of course, she didn't remember saying it to us, but she remembered that thing. Of course, yeah, I agree with that. I think it's a very good idea. If you can deal with without medicine with any problem, do it. Because any type of medicine, it can't be good for you. It will make you addicted to it, addicted at least psychologically. You know, you want to take whatever, ashwagandha to feel better. Just don't use anything. Rely on your own mind. You don't need it. You are too young for it. I'm too young for that too. There is no doubt that you will have to learn how to deal with stress, because your life is going to be definitely stressful. The amount of work is going to be stressful. You ask how to deal with the family. This is today the lesson, right? how to deal with it. Of course, a lot of stress, a lot of work, and at the same time, you go to your child's school and they say, oh, you know, your son is behind a little. That's a source of serious stress and things like that. So you have to deal with it, because there are going to be deadlines, there are going to be rejections of your papers, they will reject your proposals, you will not have the money, you will have a conflict with your colleague, with your dean, you will be fired or whatever, you know, all kinds of things. I can guarantee you that your life is going to be, unless you are a movie star, Hollywood movie star, your life is definitely going to teach you a lesson in the sense of sometimes having difficult times. That's guaranteed. So you have to learn how to deal with it. During the working hours, like 8 to 6, for example, I thought originally, when I was a young, kind of a little bit arrogant fellow, I thought, you know, this is for the bureaucrats, working hours. I work all the time. Yes, I can work in the evening, in the morning, at night, etc. And then I was taught a lesson by, I had a few visitors from the Netherlands. I had a colleague who sent me some students for master's degrees. They worked on master's degrees with me. And very often they would come in the morning, 8 o'clock, and then, you know, 5, 6 o'clock or 7, anyway, some early evening, they would leave. And they would come the next morning. They worked six days a week, so Saturday also they worked. And I thought, you know, in the beginning, that's kind of, what is that? Okay, this is a Dutch thing, I thought. I lived in that country for six years. But I had another student, a Chinese student, who was like that too. He would come at 8 o'clock in the morning, and then, you know, 5 o'clock, he would go. He would close all the books and go. And I thought, whom did I hire? You know, this was the first year that he was working with me. But then he turned out to be one of the best, one of my best doctoral students. Really very smart fellow. I spoke to him later, you know, informally. We talked about this managing people. So when I was having coffee or tea or with him, or maybe in nature somewhere, I asked him how many hours he worked. When he was already successful, he said, well, you know, I go home at 5 because then I have dinner with my wife and so. But then, you know, 8 o'clock, I go to my room and then do more work until midnight or so. So he was actually working long hours, but being in the office during the day only. The Dutch people were also very successful. They were also doing their work. So if you have, especially if you are if you have a family, if you have somebody else waiting for you at home, it's a good idea to organize your hours in such a way that you can coordinate it with your spouse. I think it's a good idea. So just make sure that you're using those hours efficiently. And, you know, if you need, you work longer sometimes or... What fits your busy schedule better? Exercising 1 hour a day or being dead 24 hours a day? That's... How to keep stress at bay, so, you know, at a distance from you. Things and activities that you like most. That's a nice way of taking distance from stress. And there are many things that you can do. Some people do things that are really crazy, maybe somewhat risky. They say about Californians, you know, the Silicon Valley, around San Francisco, Los Angeles, they work hard, but they play hard. Playing hard doesn't mean that they, you know, that they are not nice to other people. Playing hard means, what they mean by that is they rest intensively. It's not uncommon to do windsurfing on the waves, you know, doing flops with the windsurfing, all kind of paragliding. They are resting very intensively. They work hard, but at the same time, when they do something, they do also things that are crazy. You can find something that really is good for you. You need physical exercise, for example. You really need it. If you don't do it, absolutely start putting it into your busy schedule. Because if you exercise, if you really get tired, your muscles are aching, I have discovered that my mind is very clear then. I came back from a training. I could so easily, you know, drink something, take tea, and... think. It's definitely calming you down. If there are any stressful things, then they will have the tendency of going away. So sports, yoga is very good. I did yoga for about a year when I was still a master's student, and it stays with you for a long, long, long time. 20, 30 years later, 20 years later, 20-something maybe, I was in a very stressful situation. I had to get a job in Pittsburgh, a faculty position. There were two openings, but one didn't fit me too well. So just one opening that I could get. And very stressful situation. What I remember I woke up early. I couldn't sleep because of the stress. I did some relaxation exercises. I still remember them. You don't forget that. So that's another thing that you can do. Fishing, I do that too. When it becomes too busy, what I do is I take a day off, even if it's a weekday, doesn't matter. Take my canoe on the top of my car, go for a whole day fishing somewhere. Here in the Aroostook, wonderful areas to do that. I usually fish for predators, so I move a lot. It's a good exercise. Dancing. I discovered it when I was 50. Can you imagine? My wife encouraged me to take dancing lessons, Latin dancing. We have so many ladies here. Out of curiosity, among the ladies, who likes dancing? You don't? You don't like them? I don't know, but at least probably 60% of the ladies like dancing. What about gentlemen? How many of you like dancing? That's typical. When I went once dancing in Białystok, we danced Latin, there was a salsa dance. The picture was the following. There were two men in the room dancing, in the ballroom. I was one of them. The other guy was dancing also. The room was full of ladies. And if you went out, there was like 10, 15 men kind of leaning against the wall. I forgot if they were smoking or not, or just chatting. If I knew how much ladies like dancing, I would have learned dancing when I was 15 and not 50. I'm still saying I do it for my wife, but that's not true. Don't tell her that. I really started liking it. Gentlemen, ladies somehow get it quickly. I don't know how they do that. Maybe because they like it. They learn dancing like that. For a man, it's difficult because dancing is one of those situations in life, very few situations, when the man leads. And that puts a burden of learning to lead. You have to learn the rhythm. So listen to the music to step at the right moment. You have to learn the steps. Now, every dance has different steps, and you have to learn to lead. It took me a year of very frustrating kind of experience until I started to like it. Because I noticed after a few lessons, my wife was almost like flying, you know, when she was with another partner, we were changing in the circle. She would dance, as if she was born dancing. And I had a hard time with that, because you know the guys were leading her, so she knew what to do, so easy. But it was difficult. But it's worth it. If you, gentlemen, I would like to advise you to start learning to dance. It's you can easily do some pleasure to your spouse, to your wife, to your girlfriend. At the same time, you can exercise. It's movement, and you can also relax. It's a very nice way to relax. Sometimes at home, when we hear good music on the radio, we would just my wife would run to my room, take me out, and we will dance a little bit or something. She is mostly the one who is doing this. Anyway, something that keeps your mind away from your work for a little bit, and each one of you has something for sure, something that you really like. It's a good idea. In order to be efficient, to choose something that requires you to move because of that physical exercise, which you need anyway. So you don't waste time, you exercise at the same time. Each of these is actually good movement. Of course, you can do chess playing, but then you still need to exercise because you need to move. Nature is phenomenal. If you haven't experienced it, if you grew up in a city, absolutely try it. Go to the mountains somewhere, rivers, some nice place. It's phenomenal. It's you rest like, amazingly. So these are my people. These are my people at one of the retreats. I mentioned retreats last. Actually, you saw this slide last week. There were some other people. These are two Dutch guys, by the way, who were visiting me, and other people from the department. I found this just recently. The newest version is not yet online, but I'll put the newest version. Sometimes you must walk a long way to come to your senses. That's my translation of this Polish. Definitely, nature is phenomenal. Walking or just admiring the green around you, nature, how beautiful it is. It's one of those things that really makes you less stressed. I already talked about this. Working during the office hours is not as bad as you might think. It's not really as if you are a bureaucrat. Sometimes it's just a way of matching your working hours to your family. You just need to be efficient. Of course, if you need, you work longer. This is a joke. There is a website, PhD Comics. If you don't know that, maybe you want to. If you want to relax for 15 minutes, you can look up some jokes there. They're all humor, PhD humor, working on your PhDs. And you know, the vicious circle. You stay up late, then you are tired, and then you get even less work done. Then you stay up, you have to stay up even later, and then pull all-nighter, crash is, you just collapse out of exhaustion. Or you can reset. Next thing is avoiding stressful situations. You cannot avoid everything, and sometimes you shouldn't be avoiding, but in general, it's a good idea to avoid stressful situations. Stress, remember, here's where you want to be, here's where you don't want to be, but this is where stress is. Things that are important, and now, you have to do it now. So if you are here, you are going to be less here. That will make you avoid stress better. This is something that I have to say that in our culture, in Polish culture, we are not doing it too well. I'm basing it on my observations of the Polish people. Sometimes in the beginning when I first came back to Poland, I wanted to write a series of articles on my website, like blogs, experience of a Martian, you know, somebody from another planet who comes here. I definitely noticed that compared to other cultures, that we in Poland, we are very gentle. Sometimes we are too gentle. A colleague, for example, is not, the colleague is doing something that we don't like, or neighbor is doing something that we don't like, and we don't say anything about it. We don't want to have any conflict. And in our culture, we often postpone it for too long. In the Netherlands, the Dutch are very direct. And by the way, I also read about people in this region. I think it was Klimuszko who wrote it in one of his books that I read years ago, that people in this region are very direct compared to other regions in Poland, which is interesting. I have two neighbors who've been here for generations. One of them is very direct. He will tell you right away. The other one is very, very gentle, too gentle even. So anyway, the Dutch will tell you right away. So you have a situation, for example, somebody comes to your office and puts his leg on your desk, right? The Dutch will tell you right away, don't put your leg on, your shoe is dirty or something, they will tell you right away. In Poland, sometimes people don't say anything, they just suffer. And if you do that, at some point, that will lead to an explosion and frustration. You kind of, you are angry at that guy. He's doing this. to you. I mean, sorry, I'm the guy. You are angry at me, but you don't say anything. And then, you know, I do it for the second, third, fifth time. And inside, you kind of feel, you know, what kind of person is it? I don't feel well in his presence, etc. So don't do that. Just say it somehow. Look at the person. Look at the feet, the person. Or say something. Would you please not put your legs on my desk? I sometimes put my papers here or something. Just say it. And this is solving the problems early. If you solve your problems early, you put the boundaries that are not, they are out of limits for the other people. You just say it, make it sure. Did you notice how smart children are? When they are around a new person, they try to test the limits. They try to this, they try that, and some people will allow them everything. And people who don't allow them everything, they set the limits, the children immediately learn it. Very quickly they learn it. I cannot do that with the grandpa. They don't do that. And then the relationship is actually very good with the grandpa. They feel respect for the grandpa. That's very human. So set the limits. Tell, I don't want this. I don't like it. Say it. Small conflicts, if they are worth it, of course. Because if you are with a stranger somewhere in a bus, who cares, right? If he or she hasn't learned to be any culture, you are not going to teach them. But if you are dealing with your family members or friends, colleagues, it's worth it, showing them the boundaries. This will prevent further explosion. In many cultures we have it. In Polish it's... when something bad happens, you are wiser. The Dutch are very. It's a society of farmers, really. They have a very similar thing. It says exactly when the what's the young cow? Calf, I think. When calf is already. When it's boy, my English starts getting rusty. When the calf is drowned, they cover the hole, right? So they forget to cover the hole until something bad happens. Then they do it, right? But there are other things like better to prevent than to heal later, to treat later. The same thing exactly in English. An ounce of prevention is better than a pound of cure. In Dutch, the same thing, exactly the same thing. It must be coming from something, maybe from Latin. So recognize problems early and do something about them. Again, when there is no pressure, when you are not angry, prevent future explosion by just solving the problems early. And also, sometimes the environment may be bad for you, maybe toxic, maybe people are not honest, maybe you notice that, ooh, this is dangerous, this is some kind of, you know, a mafia environment. Just leave early when you recognize it. Don't get there too long. You've seen this slide. If you like your work, if you like what you're doing, that's also preventing stress, definitely. Because you like doing whatever you're doing. You must have seen this one already. Not? The slide was there already or not? No?
No.
You know from which movie it is?
Karate Kid.
Karate Kid, but the old one. You probably know the newer one when the kid was... he was a young African-American, I think, but the same idea. So Karate Kid, the kid is being bullied at school and then he finds this old Japanese guy who is teaching him. But what he does is he tells him, okay, here are two different, cloth, and you have to polish the car. You polish it right this way and three times this way, three times this way, and he's working the whole day. His arms are aching like hell, but he rebels. He says, no, I'm not going to do that anymore. And then the Japanese guy shows him that all these movements are important in blocking. So he tries to hit him, and the kid is blocking the hand with the movements that he was learning. In all martial arts, and that's a metaphor really, it's always important to have the foundations right, the basics. Once I was doing kendo for a couple of years, I think, kendo, Japanese sword fighting. Once there was a Japanese grandmaster who visited us, and we thought he would show us something, you know, like an invincible cut through which we can cut the opponent. You know, the first hour he wanted us to walk around, and walking in kendo is kind of funny. You always walk this way. Important that you don't change up and down. You don't show the opponent what you are going to do. So without any motion, just hand, legs. And he was asking us to do it for an hour. He was checking us, correcting, doing things. The foundations. Foundations are very important in everything. If you have the foundations right, if your posture is right, you are going to be more stable and do things correctly. So foundations are important, definitely in things like stress. If you have the right foundations, then it's going to be easier to deal with stress. What do I mean by right foundations? Do you know this metaphor with big stones, small stones? I haven't talked about it here, have I? No. So here is a thing that I heard once. I was listening to tapes. I was walking years ago. This was some kind of motivational tape. The guy was telling the following metaphor. A speaker came with an empty jar. He took a bag of stones, big stones, put those stones in the jar. It was full with the big stones. And he asked the audience, "Is this jar full?" "Sure, full," people were saying. He pulls another bag with smaller stones, and he empties that bag. The smaller stones find their way down. The whole bag of the small stones gets in. Is it full? No, now it's full. He gets a bag of sand and puts the sand in. Sand goes inside. Is it full? No, now it's definitely full. And he gets a pitcher of water and pours water in still. So the idea here is that if you start with big stones, like on the left-hand side, you can fit a lot of things. If you start with small stones, then the big stones are not going to fit anymore. It's a metaphor. Big stones are the important things, the important principles that are absolutely important for you as a human, for your career, for your personal life. This is your family, your career, your profession, things that are really important. Small stones are, you know, other things that you can easily fit when you have the big stones at the right place. They will fit one way or another. So that's what I mean by principles. You also need some kind of guiding light that will help you to regain your balance, because problems are guaranteed. I can guarantee you problems unless you are, as I said, celebrate, I think. Celebrity. Guarantee. So things will come, and then you need to know what to do, and who will tell you what to do. When you are a child, your parents may tell you what to do, but you need to, part of growing up is knowing what to do. So you need some kind of guiding light, some kind of skeleton, that the big stones are the skeleton. One thing that I have definitely discovered early on, actually, that is that people are much more important than things. Absolutely. Suppose this school, this university burns completely. All the buildings are down, burned, all the computers and all the equipment and labs. The university will survive if we survive, if the faculty survives and you. If needed, we'll be teaching in the grass field, yes, until we build another building. If the people are gone, though, this university is over, until you identify, find new people. People are much more important. And also in personal sense, they are more important. Your family is more important than anything that you can gain in your professional life. If I were an atheist, which I'm not, I'm a religious person, but if I were an atheist, I would definitely consider a religion just based on rational thinking. Religion is an absolutely wonderful thing to make you healthier and less stressful, less stressed. Probably it doesn't matter too much what religion it is, whatever religion you were brought up in, it makes you just less stressed. It tells you what to do, makes you relaxed, tells you the proportion, you know, there are things more important than the little things that you worry about, that you stress about. So definitely I would recommend going back to the foundations, whatever the foundations you have. That definitely helps. Good investment in health. As far as time management is concerned, don't overdo it. Here is how you can overdo it. Here is in psychology there are several really important experiments, and this is one of them, telling us about the nature of humans, of people. They did the experiment in a seminary. A seminary is a school for priests. So it was probably, it was definitely a Christian seminary. I don't know if it was Catholic or any other denomination. And the experiment was as follows. They randomly assigned seminarians to two groups, the treatment and the control, of course, like in an experiment. The treatment was they had to go to another building let's say, from C to A. They had to go there to give a sermon on Good Samaritan. You know the story of Good Samaritan. Anybody in this culture should know that story, right? Anybody who doesn't know, I'd be happy to tell. You don't know. Good Samaritan. Jesus is asked, who is my neighbor? Somebody asks him. My neighbor means bliźni. He said, I tell you a story. There was a man who went on a business trip, and he was attacked by bandits. He was wounded, robbed, and left next to the road. And people were going that road, and they were passing. There was a priest who looked at him and went further. There was, who else was that? Pharisee. Pharisee was a sect, a Jewish sect at that time. He looked at him, went further. And then there was a Samaritan. Samaritans were, they were Jews, but they were looked down upon. They were worse kind of Jews. They lived in the north of Israel, of the Holy Land. The Judeans didn't like them too much. So they were, you know. And a Samaritan went there, noticed the person in need, stopped, dressed his wound, brought him to a hotel, an inn, and said, I have to go, unfortunately, on a business trip, but here is this man, here is some money, please take care of him. On my way back, I will reimburse you whatever extra cost you made. And Jesus asked him, who was the neighbor of that person, yes? And they said, of course, the Samaritan. So this is a beautiful story telling us that sometimes we have to take care of our neighbors. So they were reminded about it because they had to give a sermon on this. The other group was asked to give a boring lecture on the opportunities to earn money as a seminarian. They had to go through a corridor like here from A to C. And what they did is they placed an actor there, an actor who was playing somebody in problems. So, my heart, you know, he went down and complaining about some health problems. The question was, who would stop to help that person? And it turns out that the two groups of seminarians, those who were reminded about the story, they were just as likely to stop as the others. So they just, most of them passed, very few stopped. An important variable, because it was a factorial experiment with two factors, the second factor was time. they gave some of them only 5 minutes, and the others they gave 15 minutes to go. Those who had more time, 15 minutes, were more likely to stop. The others who had very little time, they were hurried. They went on because they had to go to the other room to give a lecture. So why am I telling this story is don't get time efficiency in the way of your humanity. Definitely, you know. Of course you have to be time efficient, but there are more important things than that. So I'm putting this slide just to, you know, to make this case that time efficiency is important, but you are most of all human, and then you are an efficient scientist. This is a cool thing. We will have maybe a couple of minutes to play that. It's a movie called, with the title Idiocracy. Idiocracy is a play of word on democracy. Year 2500, they show that this humanity gets overall very stupid, and so they show how humanity gets stupid. And there is this couple that is postponing to have children forever until they cannot have children anymore. Intelligent, with high IQs, educated. I should find time to play that. The movie is, the idea is great. The movie is so-so, but definitely funny. There are some funny moments in the movie. And as prophetic as Sex Misja, this Polish movie, which you know. It's as prophetic as that one, I think. A mission statement is helpful. Covey, Stephen Covey, also advises in the book The Secrets of Highly Efficient Families, advises to have a mission statement for families. I talked about it last week. That also helps, I think. Another thing you can do is help others to be less stressed, especially because you are going to be very soon supervisors. So responsible for other people. Definitely friendships. I don't mean friendships in the bad sense, koleżowanie, but friendships in the good sense, supporting each other. It's wiser to help your friends than to compete with them. And you are not, you know, you are not a buddy, you are a friend, a true friend. So avoid it. Avoid the brown nosing also. I talked about this. Definitely we are social beings and we should feel... I showed you this slide last week, build a healthy environment. We talked about this, I'm going to go faster here. Team building, that slide was also there. You have to help people to be one team. When we are in a team, it's less stressful because we know we can count on the other people. We are good to them, they will be good to us also. Remember that thing? That is also nice, it kind of releases the stress. Even though they may be stressed because they may die in a battle, they know that if they die, there's going to be beautiful ceremony. The family will be there, proud of them. You've seen that also. So this is the last slide, and I show you that piece of the movie. It's really funny. Have a calendar, but always remember what is important. Make appointments with yourself. That's another really good advice. If you haven't had that advice yet, try it. It's really good advice. Know when to refuse and know when to ask for advice. Ask for advice often, but make a decision yourself. Don't blame others who gave you that advice, because you are the decision maker. Another thing that is important there is when you give advice, don't feel bad when somebody is not following it. Some people give advice and they are expecting, I give you an advice and I'm disappointed that you didn't follow. That's of course a very bad feeling, yes? I give you an advice, but you just make a decision, I should not feel disappointed, yes? Okay, you figure it out yourself. And then do what you love and love what you do. Sometimes simple motivators, people advise that, like, I will eat an ice cream when I have finish this this paper or something. Yes, that sometimes helps with motivating. Oh, stress is part of your life. Motivates you, allows you to feel that you are alive. Some types of stress are unpleasant, unhealthy, and harmful.
try to organize your life in such a way to avoid, so as to avoid such sources of stress. When you, with what we cannot avoid, we have to learn to live. And then the things that, like exercise and other things that will help us. We have just a few minutes, but this should, oh, we have enough time to play that piece of the movie. Let's see if I have, if YouTube is going to be better quality. Where is it? Oh, here it is. Oops. I think we have a sound here, so that's good. Unfortunately, advertisements. I'll turn on the speak, the sound. That's the opening sequence of the movie.
As the 21st century began, human evolution was at a turning point. Natural selection, the process by which the strongest, the smartest, the fastest reproduced in greater numbers than the rest, a process which had once favored the noblest traits of man, now began to favor different traits. Most science fiction of the day predicted a future that was more civilized, more intelligent. But as time went on, things seemed to be heading in the opposite direction, a dumbing down. How did this happen? Evolution does not necessarily reward intelligence. With no natural predators within the herd, it began to simply reward those who reproduced the most and left the intelligent to become an endangered species.
Having kids is such an important decision.
We're just waiting for the right time. Not something you want to rush into, obviously.
No way.
Oh, shit, I'm pregnant again!
What? I got 3 damn kids! I thought
you
was on the
field
or some shit!
Hell no!
What's
your thing? Remy! Don't get me out of here! There's no way we could have a child now. Not with the market the way it is, no.
That just wouldn't make any sense.
Sequence explaining why a guy who had 100 IQ who was frozen and woken up in 2500, he was the smartest person on earth. Interesting idea. And, but you saw, you definitely recognize the problem that we have. There's never time, good time for family, and this is an important thing for us. For us personally, but also for the society. So don't forget about that when trying to be very efficient with time. Oops, sorry, that's not... so that is all. Do you have any questions? No? Okay, very good. Thank you very much, then. I'll see you next week, and we will talk about another, I think, very useful, important thing. Thank you.